We have a big show for you tonight.
Now for something completely different.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to Big Foamy Head. This is Big Foamy Head 101. We're kind of going back and revisiting what the show is all about, reintroducing ourselves to a lot of new listeners that apparently are coming into the middle of things. We've been doing this for about 3 years, and we're just going to come back and talk about why we do this and what beer is all about. Big Foamy Head is composed of Dick, Rick, and Mike. We were all in Memphis until Rick decided to leave us and move to Denver, but he's still here via Skype. And what would you say? We're dedicated beer fans who love a good beer and love some good blues. And
amen to that.
So basically, the show's about good beer, good blues, both as craft and an art. And what's more artistic than a beautiful big foamy head perched atop a sparkling glass of delicious craft beer?
But I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What's beer?
A beer is not what you think it is. It's typically four ingredients. And they are yeast, hops, malt, and water. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, Rick, it's a law, right?
Right. The German beer purity law, and also known as the Bavarian purity law, that's been around since the 1500s, and it used to only have three ingredients before they realized that yeast was actually a component of beer.
And that's when they thought you had to use the magic stick to stir the fermented stuff, and it would turn into magical beer, right?
They had no idea why it turned into beer, but they just said that's God is good.
Yeah, that's it. It was a divine drink, and it's been around forever, and we've covered this countless times on many shows. So what we're going to do, though, is kind of go down about the basics of a beer. And for longtime listeners of the show, we're kind of covering the same ground, but it's good to remember the history of where all this came from. Bottom line, there are only two types of beers, an ale and a lager. And what we're talking about is the way they're fermented, with a lager being a cooler, longer fermentation, and ale being a little warmer and quicker fermentation.
Well, lager means cold storage.
Yes. And didn't that come originally because they would they stored beer in caves, and it took a little longer to ferment?
The ice caves, right. And certain types of yeast thrived in that environment and came out with a nice, clear, crisp beer, maybe a little sulfury. But that's the tradition of lagers.
So lagers, by and large, you think of them as, and you see that word used on a beer, on a lot of commercial beers, that it's a lager, like it's a type of beer. And like I said, it just simply means it's cold. It's just a type of brewing. And they are kind of a cleaner, milder in flavor. I don't know if I'd use the word smoother, but it's
clean,
crisp, yeah. And they're kind of lighter, I think. And ales are much more robust and rich and different. But that's not always the case, right? Like our first beer we've got is a lager. It says so right there on the bottle. This is from Left Hand Brewing Company. It is a 2007 smoked Goosenator Doppelbach lager.
Man, that's a mouthful.
Worn out just saying the name.
It's killing me that I'm not enjoying it with you.
And Rick, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm drinking a home-brewed Doppelbach, which is pretty good, but I don't have the smoke characters that you were just mentioning.
But you have, in your brewing past, done smoked beers.
Wow.
And so lagers is something you can also create at home. And looking at this, I just poured mine. I'm using kind of a stemmed, taller wine glass, and poured it in. Got about an inch and a half head, and it's got a dark amber.
It's a beautiful beer.
Kind of a toppy color.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you can smell the smoke. Not mm-hmm. too much, but a little bit, right?
You can taste it.
Coming up? Oh, yeah? I haven't had mine yet.
It's pretty good. Very, very tasty.
So you got some notes on somewhere over there on... Mm-hmm. The Goosenator.
It's a smoked Doppelbock, and color's amber, 7.7% alcohol by volume, and 27 IBUs, international bittering units.
Man.
So, you know, good on the alcohol, and it's not that bitter.
No.
It's pretty malty.
I think it's very malty. I mean, almost got like a sorghum sort of taste with that smoke.
And then
smoke.
That smoke comes on the back end, and it's very delicious.
It's a really interesting beer. You would not know that. I mean, if you were just Joe Schmo off the street, never had anything outside of mainstream beers, and I told you this is a lager, and if you had heard the word, you'd think Budweiser or Coors or something like that. I mean, God, this is just knock you down. You wouldn't know.
You know, this
just
beer,
the flavor, right?
When I drink it, it's kind of like on the exhale after you take that swallow. You get that smoke flavor up in the back of your nose. It just, it just very, very good.
Now, by adding the smoke, though, this is taking it out of a typical Doppelbock classification, which we're going to talk about classifications of beers in a minute. Rick, what is your Doppelbock like?
Mine has the same dark amber color. It doesn't quite have as much carbonation on it, but that was due to me not adding as much. It's got about 9.98 alcohol, or percent alcohol by volume.
Whoa.
It was brewed with Munich malts, Vienna malts, crystal malts, and some even darker crystal malts.
Hey, Rick, does the alcohol, that high alcohol, still keep it in a Doppelbock class? Or does that matter?
Yes, it's within tolerances or the range, certainly.
And we talk about classes of beers. We're going to kind of cover those in a minute. But the lagers, when you think of lagers, and we've already kind of alluded to this, most lagers in the United States are made by the giant conglomerate brewers, such as Anheuser-Busch and SAB, Miller, Coors, whoever else they bought. It's rapidly turning into two giant dark armies that are making this enormous quantities of beer. I mean, hundreds of millions, if not billions of gallons of beer. It's just a surreal amount. And all the rest out there are pretty much microbreweries, ranging from the biggest micros, like Sam Adams. I think they might have just gone over the top, to some of the folks like Left Hand. And, you know, these are guys who, they make what is referred to as craft beer. So craft beer, the definition of that is beer with a taste, with a lot of flavor and diversity, and there's an art to it. So Rick is drinking.
I define it as something that I would drink.
Okay. Okay. It's something that, like, Rick made his beer. So the craft element of the act of creating it is one thing, and then the taste itself is an art, because there are so many, and just like there are so many different styles of art, there are just a multitude of styles of craft beer. Now, the styles are actually categorized for people who choose to enter their beers into the BJCP sanctioned contest. BJCP, we throw those words around a lot. Beer Judge Certification Program. And they have a number of style classes. There are 23 classes, and there are subclasses within it. And the total of these is 80 different types of beer. So here's the thing you got to know about it. The majority of all beer consumed in the U.S. is found in the first three categories: light American lager, standard American lager, and premium American lager. These are the weakest, lamest beers there are.
Yellow fizzy beers.
They're just crap. I mean, according to the BJCP, and they do throw them a little bone here, it says it's little to no malt aroma, can be grainy, sweet, or corn-like if present. You are allowed to add corn, rice, or other adjuncts.
Yeah, Bud and Miller do it all the time.
Right. And you just said, what'd you say the IBUs with the bitterness units?
27 on this.
Is 27 on this, which you can barely taste because of the malt. On a light lager, the IBUs are 8 to 12.
Same thing on the standard.
But you know,
American.
A light lager like that's not going to have near as much malt as this particular beer,
no.
right?
No, it's squat.
It's going to be water, you know, watered
right.
down malt.
And the ABV of these range from 3.2 to 6%, no higher.
Yeah.
Okay, you're never going to find a Bud or a Miller Genuine Draft or a Michelob over 6%. It's just out of the class. Okay, so having said that, you got 77 other styles of beer, right? Despite this, we still in America drink the swill, the worst stuff. And the total U.S. beer market 2007 was 211 million barrels.
I found that number to be amazing.
Yeah, it's a huge amount.
Damn, that's a lot of beer.
It's a lot of beer because was it 50 or 48? How many gallons to a barrel? It's 48 or 50 something. It's a surreal amount, right? And you look at that, the total domestic craft segment accounts for just 8 million barrels. That's 3.8% of all of beer drank. Only 3.8, barely 4% of all beer is what we would call good beer.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just a blip on the radar.
Yeah. Just a blip. But it's getting bigger. It's growing.
You know, and with that small of a number, why would Bud and them be interested in this craft beer, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right.
I mean, they're getting into the market. They see the writing on the wall. People want something of sustenance and something of
flavor.
Yeah,
and we're tired of paying
a bang for their buck.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at it that it's a buffet. If you go to a buffet, you don't just sit over in a corner eating toast, right? You go and try a little of this, try a little of that.
Yeah.
So it's literally a buffet of beers out there in the world. So try some. And that's what we do.
I do like unbuttered toast every now and then, though.
Well,
but
not
I really
all the time.
I really don't care for a Budweiser anytime.
So what we do now is we try and spread the knowledge of what's out there, as well as spreading some Memphis sounds. We kind of bring the Memphis lifestyle to the masses all over the world. And we've got some of that right now with our first musical guest is somebody you came across, Mike, Terry Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wall Bangers, and this is a Memphis band. They are they can be found playing all over the place. And we got their song from Stay Away Blues available on Amazon. So here's Terry Wall and the Wall Bangers.
Stay away from my door. Stay away, blues. like when you're born to lose. And I'd love to sing a happy song, and it'd be easier if you would just go on. Stay away, blues. Stay away from my door. Stay away, blues, 'cause I don't wanna cry no more. Well, stay away, blues. Yeah, stay away from my door. Stay away, blues, 'cause I don't wanna cry.
Terry Wall, what'd you think?
I like him.
Yeah,
I really do.
That's good. That's like Memphis Bar Band, and you just hear all these influences in him. He's really a talent. And
you know, I'll tell you how I came across him. I was doing a search for the drummer, Bill Lineberry, and I used to follow him in a band years ago, Secrets, here in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And we used to go to an old bar downtown on the square, and hadn't seen Bill in years and years, and just went and did a search, and then it came up Terry Wall and the Wallbangers.
So he's a drummer with them.
He's a drummer, yeah.
Okay.
And then I sent him an email, and we got to going back and forth, but that's why I had you look him up.
Yeah, this is his, I think, second CD that's out, and this one was produced at Ardent. A lot of people come out of Ardent.
Oh, man.
And, who knows what how he swung the deal, but he ended up having Don Nix produce, and Don is a huge deal.
Yeah,
and it's very cool that obviously he sees something, right? And of course, you know, you heard it. I mean,
yeah, big in Memphis music too.
Yeah, huge. He played with the Marquees, with Steve Cropper, Doug Dunn, and as a producer, worked with Leon Russell and Gary Lewis and the Playboys, and that guy you may probably haven't heard of, George Harrison from the Beatles. And
who's that?
George Harrison. Who's the guy in the back? But his big deal was playing at the concert for Bangladesh, and wrote a blues standard we played before, Going Down, which, speaking of Going Down, I think my beer's gone all the way down.
It's history, man.
And yours
time for another one.
Yours is about gone too. And this was for a lager. What were we saying earlier?
Clean,
light taste. This was thick, rich, and smoked.
Smoky.
Jeez,
it had a little too much smoky. It was really good at first, but toward the end of the glass, it got strong, tougher and tougher to.
It
take
was,
that last
it was an awful
swallow.
Lot, awful yeah. lot of flavor. I think we probably had a little too much. This would be a smaller beer would have been.
And
good.
Then we were eating smoked, or not a smoked sausage, but an Italian sausage
with
and
rendezvous.
Cheese with rendezvous on it. So pretty rich.
And
rich
it actually
thing.
It paired well.
It did. It was tasting really good, but I think it was just maybe near the end it just overwhelmed it.
It's too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so, Doppelbach is a huge lager beer. It's what the monks used to make during Lent for fasting, and they called it liquid bread, and it was actually meant to sustain them through periods, you know, when they weren't eating. So it's just a big, heavy lager beer, which is unusual for lagers.
I think you're right. I think you don't need to eat while you're drinking this particular beer.
I think I see a bunch of thin, drunk monks.
Yeah. or you drink this beer and eat unbuttered toast.
There you go. That's like bread and liquid bread.
Yeah.
Now, it was that's why I wanted to have this. It's like lager has just such this kind of like, in you know, the way we look at things, kind of a wimp kind of, and this is anything but. This is a monster. So we talked about how the beer tastes. And the way you talk about a beer, the way you describe a beer kind of lends itself to the tasting notes, to understanding the different beers. It's kind of like you develop a vocabulary. Everybody's heard people describe about wine, and they call it oaky and obnoxious and whatever. You know, they got these kind of like, it sounds like frou-frou terms, right? Well, that same vocabulary exists for beers, and there's a lot of words that are used. But the way you so how do you describe, how do you taste a beer and kind of describe it? Well, there's five categories typically that when you're a beer judge that you go by, and they're pretty basic: aroma, how does it smell, the flavor, obviously how does it taste, the appearance, the mouth feel, which we didn't really talk about, and your overall impression. We just did four of the five, talking about the left hand. First thing we did was we talked about the smell coming off of it. We looked at it, the color, the head, etc. We drank it and started talking about the flavors. And the overall impression was what we just summed it up. It finished a little too overpowering, etc. All right, mouth feel. This was not, well, we sort of did. It was not a clean light.
I think that one was a little oily.
It was, and kind of a thick beer. Very heavy to me. Okay, so see, this anybody can do this. You don't really have to be a judge. You don't have to take a course. You have to say what you feel. Although it helps to have some words to work with, right?
Well, I feel everybody's a judge. That's what I love about beer. It's very,
You know if you like it, right?
Yeah, I mean, everybody can be a beer judge.
Yeah.
The way I look at it, you tell me what you think, I tell you what I think, and we go on and open up another beer.
And it's great. And yeah, it's the tastes are just all over the place. Some of the words that we've used are piney, grassy, horsey,
goaty,
feet. Those are not the good ones. Sweet. Just all kinds of words to describe it. And within hoppy beers, the two big words are citrus and pine.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the bad words would be phenolic and astringency.
Yeah.
And the beer flaws.
Diacetyl.
Right. Yeah. The acid tastes like, it tastes like you're starting to get. And alcohol is one that can go either way, right? Depending on the type of beer, if you taste alcohol.
Yeah.
But, the one thing,
sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. I mean,
the one thing that irritates me is whenever somebody says, "This tastes like beer," it's like, "Well, what do you mean? Beer tastes like anything." I mean, there are just so many different ways that a beer can taste, right?
That sounds like your wife, though, Dick.
She says some beers taste like bile.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought she always said beer. They taste like beer.
Well, no, she says it tastes like bile. Yeah, she she's not a fan of hoppy beers, right?
That's true.
And so this next beer, and I told her we were having this, and she kind of said, well, it sounds good. Let me tell you the name of this beer, Omegang Chocolate Indulgence. Now, that didn't sound like a beer.
No, it doesn't. Sound like a dessert.
It's not something that, hey, let me get a pitcher of chocolate indulgence over here. You just play some Skinner. You just don't, you know, it's just not something that you'd think of, you know, if you were bowling and it was your round, you wouldn't go get a pitcher of chocolate.
Give me a round of chocolate indulgence over here.
This is an ale that we're going to, and we're kind of pulling out some of the more, obtuse beers, different sort of beers, just to show the diversity. So Omegang is a fantastic brewery in upstate New York, and these guys are typically Belgian-style brewers, okay? And we've talked about in shows past and will again in shows future about what's the difference between Belgium. We won't get into that now. This is a special 10th anniversary beer that they brewed. This is a 2007 edition. It's 7% alcohol, Cooperstown, New York. It's brewed with Belgian chocolate. Now, they have violated the purity laws because they laid down a bed of cocoa, Belgian cocoa.
Too many ingredients.
On this, yeah. So this is a special chocolate.
Read what it says about the cocoa right there. That's
this
pretty cool.
Ale brewed with cocoa powder.
Yeah, ale brewed with cocoa powder. That's pretty cool.
So they lay that down.
Let's discuss this, actually, because the Germans, you know, they've got their German beer purity law. No one else abides by that.
Yeah.
You know, especially the Belgians. They basically are flipping them the bird and saying, you know, to heck with your law there. So they add almost anything and everything to their beers. It's night and day.
We're having a little foam over here. You heard the cork pop. And this is a comes in a 720 milliliter bottle. And it is an imperial. No, I'm sorry. It's a regular stout. It's close to an imperial stout. Now, when you think of stout, of course, you think of number one in the world, Guinness, right? This is not your daddy's Guinness. This is
this is my Guinness.
It's a different type of stout, and we poured this. It's got a kind of lighter than usual tan head, not too high. The color is black. Opaque.
Man.
I'm holding this up. It is blocking out light. I believe the room is dimmer. It's sucking light out of the room. It's that dark. And it's got a, you take a whiff, getting a little bit, not too much. I got like just a hair of it. But some of the chocolate, and we haven't talked about this yet, one of the four ingredients is the malted barley. And the grains that you use, you can use the specialty grain. There are some called chocolate malts, right? It's the roasting and the types of grains, right?
Hey, here's a review on this beer, on Rate Beer. And it says, pours a deep brown, bordering on black with a medium creamy tan lacing head. Aroma of milk chocolate, a little bit, maybe. Vanilla nuts, light roasty malts, and some fruity esters. Flavor of caramel, milk chocolate, roasted malt, some nuts, a touch of bitterness, and vanilla. That's pretty close.
I think that's close. I don't get milk chocolate.
Yeah, I'm not really getting that. It's more of a dry, bitter, dark chocolate to me.
Yeah, like a semi-sweet, yeah. And maybe a little nut.
I'm not getting a lot of caramel, but.
No, I'm not getting any caramel. It's and it is kind of dry.
Mm-hmm.
So pair it with a dessert.
Yeah, and that's what typically you would serve the chocolate stouts, and Young's Double Chocolate Stout is one you can go to almost any grocery store and get. You get that box of chocolates, chocolate covered strawberries, something like that. Man, I mean, that's just good
this
stuff.
This one says finished is dry and chalky, and that kind of
it is a dry.
Dry,
it's not
dry.
A sweet.
Yeah,
it's not like, you know, a chocolate milkshake.
Right.
But it's a nice.
The label sounds a lot better than it tastes, I think.
Yeah.
I like it. I love this style of beer. I really do. I love the stouts and the porters and all that. They're just my favorites. But
and, of course, that's kind of a misleading word, the word stout.
True.
What do you think? I mean, when you hear that, if you didn't know any better, you think, oh, it's a strong beer.
Yeah.
No, it's just the name of it, right? And it's not that it's strong. They're typically dark with the roastier. They are more hearty beers,
right.
I guess you'd say. But, okay. And so, like Rick was saying, you pair this with chocolate, right? So, what beers go with what foods? All right. Well, like you said, chocolate goes with a chocolate beer, really, with any stout. Stouts go well with desserts. Beer, like wine, can be paired. So, where people think of white wine with fish and light flavors and red with deeper, richer flavors. It's kind of hard to segment beer like that because there's so many different styles. So we pulled down some pairing rules from Beer Advocate. Okay. The more hop bitterness the beer has, the heartier or livelier the meal needs to be to hold its own. Don't overwhelm your palate or your meal and ruin what the chef was trying to achieve.
One great pairing with hoppy beers, like the Maharaja, is a key lime pie. I had that the other day. And
really?
Oh, the contrast is just fantastic because you have the hot bitterness paired with
that tart lime,
the lime bitterness coming from the key lime.
Okay.
That's a great dessert.
And a Maharaja is an Imperial IPA. Yeah, so that's a hop bomb and a half.
Yeah.
And a super high alcohol one, too, in order to do the in order to carry that, because
I mean, key lime is really tart and tangy. And
that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Okay. So here's another rule. Another general rule is keep sweet with sweet and tart with tart, which you just said. Mm-hmm. Try to keep your beer sweeter or tartar than the sweet or tart food on the plate. There are exceptions, like pairing dry or robust beers with sweet chocolate, such as what we're drinking here, would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But like Rick just said, a hopped beer, which hops aren't always, you know, bitter is another word kind of used wrong. The bitterness simply refers to the more pronounced hop flavor, right? There are the alpha acids in it leads to the bitterness, if you want to get scientific about how a beer is, but it isn't a bad thing, and it isn't necessarily what you think of as bitter. Bitter to me is something you spit out.
Yeah.
Right? And so bittering.
You know, sometimes bitter or a hop beer, a highly hop beer or heavy hop beer could be citrus or bitter.
Well, you know, some of the things I've noticed that really goes well with hopped, really super hoppy, bitter beers is fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like peaches. Peaches and hops go great together. And that's why there's so many peach.
Apricot.
There's a lot of beers that take apricots and peaches and nectarines and things, blend them in. They complement one another. Okay? So which leads to our next rule. Throw all the rules out of the window and experiment with contrasting and complementary pairings. Match foods with complementary flavors or try contrasting them and create a slew of unique results. So, for instance, our little show snack here was the Italian sausage and some cheddar sprinkled with rendezvous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We warmed up with a nice fresh harvest. A hop bomb went real good with it. And the lager, the Doppelbock, it went with it too. But we could have taken a really light kind of Belgian blonde ale, and it probably would have gone nice with it too. Mm-hmm. It's just a little different taste. And so that's one of those things where you just got to experiment and see.
Yeah, I was thinking for the newer listeners, we should actually give some recommendations as far as sweet beers. You might go with the more caramelly heavy beers, or a Grand Cru, for example.
So. Mm-hmm. To pair with
the desserts. I mean, this has been the last one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's actually one of the easier ones to do. Pair beer with dessert, which it kind of, you know, you kind of stop for a minute and say, what? Beer with dessert?
You know, think about a meal, though. You've got usually 2, 3, 4 different items on your plate, and you're sitting there trying to pair a drink with that. And I know you try to pair it toward the main course, but still, the couple of beer dinners I've been to, they've had a beer for each course.
Right.
And I've really enjoyed that because the beer really complemented each individual item, but we would change beers from course to course. And that's, you know, that's kind of difficult to do at home, but I really like that aspect of being able to do that.
And actually, that's a fun thing for people to do at home. I think that'd be a great idea, is to have a beer food pairing dinner.
I was looking at some of the comments about this chocolate indulgence, special beer, right? Super premium, 10th anniversary special. And they were outraged at the amount of money they had to pay for this 720 milliliter bottle. $11. My God. That's the other kind of economy of scale. You can be a cheap date and try a lot of different beers, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
I mean, you go down to the Schnucks, they've got a whole wall of specialty beers. Got a World Market, right? There's all kinds of different beers.
You know, and we're in Tennessee.
And yeah, I mean, we're in Darfur of beer.
Yeah, buddy. I mean, some of these cities have some beautiful beer laws that afford you to try numerous great beers.
Right. And a lot of our listeners, and it's ironic, our listener, is it Kurt from Germany?
Uh-huh.
He sends us an email talking about how he wishes he could get these great American beers in Germany. Here's a news flash in case you didn't know it. Where all of the really good beers are now is in the U.S. Mm-hmm. This is we are having this huge renaissance. There are all kinds of great things. So, more pairing rules. For those of you who are bound to the wine pairing school of thought, think of ale as red wine and lager as white wine. Hoppy beers can also be used in place of a pairing that calls for an acidic wine. Though it honestly doesn't matter, these tips might help you to convert your taste buds over to beer or those of a friend over to beer. And that's it in a nutshell. Kind of bring somebody along, because if we were to wind the clock back about a year and a half or so, a young Mike Bond was coming along and he said, well, you know, I like a good beer. I like this. I like that. And you've had a bunch more beers.
Man, let me tell you, it has been a journey, one that I have enjoyed immensely. I cannot say how happy I am to get introduced to Big Foamy Head. It has opened up the door for me to try so many awesome beers and enjoy the flavors. I mean, some I didn't like, but the majority I did.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. You never know till you try, right?
That's right.
And nobody's going to break the bank.
No.
Right? Trying just something. And
you know, when you were talking about the $11 bottle of beer, I mean, go try to buy an $11 bottle of wine that tastes good. I mean, there are a few out there.
Sure.
But you're going to pay.
Basically, that's your colored vinegar water.
Yeah.
It's the $11 bottle.
There are a few decent wines out there for $11 a bottle, but the majority are in the $20, $25, $30 range. And there are awesome beers out there for $10 a 750 milliliter or a big bomber, you know.
I got to say, though, I have had more wow moments with beer than with wine. I've had a lot of different wines, too.
Yeah.
But with beer, you know, you get something, you put it in your mouth, and go, wow.
Yeah.
You had no idea.
And I mean, some of these are 9, 12% alcohol.
Yeah.
9 to 12. Yeah. I mean, that's a great bargain for your buck.
Yeah. It's a wealth of interesting beers out there. And so that's where, you know, as we mentioned at the top of the show.
Here's to you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you too, Rick.
Thank you.
We're talking about, you know, the newer listeners, and just to kind of tie it all together, you know, we're not the only ones doing this. There's a number of people out there doing this, and we'll talk about them later on in the show. But we have over the
They're
past
all friends of ours.
That's the thing. The sense
even
of
the beer network.
Everybody. We're all in this and just kind of promoting this and kind of introducing people to, you know, what's out there, and try for yourself. See some new things. Why not? You know, you live in the United States. You can do this. It's price of freedom, right?
That's correct.
But we've been getting a lot of publicity here lately. Mm-hmm. We've been picking up, being featured on other shows, and got a little press here and there. And it's not because of our sparkling personalities. It's because we are kind of evangelizing the craft beer, and everywhere we go, you know, we go and say, oh, well, here, have you heard about this? And try and introduce people. I mean, I do this constantly, and people go, wow, there is something else out there besides this crap that I used to steal from daddy's refrigerator. Right. And, you know, it's good stuff. So lots of good, beers out there. And we talked about pairing them with beer dinners, things that come to mind. Beer brine shrimp, the bratwurst. Mm-hmm. Man, I tell you, that Doppelbock we had, that smoked Doppelbock, I would love to get some brats and cook them down inside of some of that. Oh, yeah. Man, that's good eating. And
seafood always goes well with the allergies. Yeah. You can have shrimp and oysters and scallops. Mm-hmm.
If you want to try something really strange, get you a Young's Double Chocolate and some ice cream. You a milkshake.
Yeah.
That will hook you up.
You know, you were talking about the brats. You know, when you do your onions and peppers and all that,
mm-hmm.
you could probably pour a little of your that left hand on there.
Yeah.
And
give it all kinds of flavor. Yeah.
And all that. Man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. The alcohol burns off. You're left with flavors. And hops are kind of a spicy mm-hmm. seasoning, too.
Just don't feed them to your dog.
No.
Well, I hate to say it, but beer broths are not a secret.
No. I don't think we're breaking any new wind here. But and so how do you go and find some of these things? Okay. Beer dinners, we mentioned before. How do you find out these things? Look in your newspaper. Look on beerdinners.com. Call your local distributor, such as
Steve Barziza.
Steve, and here in Memphis, Southwestern Brewing, call, ask for Steve. He will tell
He's
you all about
an
it.
An advocate.
Go to brew pubs, tap houses, ask them about it. And here's the thing to remember. Anywhere that has beer taps will serve you a flight of beer, little samplers. So you don't have to go and blow $4 on a beer you don't like. Get you some samplers. So we got all kinds of stuff, all kinds of pairings, all kinds of samplers, more stuff coming up. And we're going to bring you some Mid-South, a little left of Memphis here, some Arkansas Southern Rock. And this is a band called Further Down. We've talked to these guys before. And if you listen to these guys, you can hear the influences of Black Crowes, Outlaws, Skinner, and some down-home blues all rolled up into this next song. This is Black and Bleach from their latest CD, 7 Years Hard Luck. So that was Further Down from Jonesboro, Arkansas. And Mike, you'd ask me how I found them.
Right.
They were on one of our local radio stations' unsigned artist playlist and a couple of websites out there. And I came across them. And I thought, man, how can these guys not be signed with a label? They're just so tight. I mean, they are just a class act and just really got it together, right?
Well, you know, after Andy Tanis, you talk to him, you kind of probably understand why That music business is pretty ruthless.
It's a ruthless business. Yeah. And, of course, here, you know, where we are in Memphis, we've just got so many talented mm-hmm. people, too, coming out. So, hey, works for us, right? Get yeah. more music, kind of spread along. That's with the good brews, the good blues, and some class acts coming out. Speaking of class and culture, Rick?
Cue the music. It's time for the Big Foamy Head Interpretive Dance Theater interpretation of Beer Haiku Daily. This is from beerhaikudaily.com. Captain Hobbs wrote it. And sesame tuna, perfectly seared in my mind. Chimay for dessert. Beer Haiku. Golf club.
Class.
Culture. Beer Haiku.
Tuna.
And that makes me want to go get some seared sesame tuna and some chimay for dessert.
That's right. This is
good stuff.
Depending on how you look at it, the high point or the low point.
But you know, you know, of all things, I guess I'm just stuck here with my chocolate and indulgence.
Yeah,
which
that's
is not
right.
a bad thing.
No, it could be worse. But
there have been mixed reviews on the chocolate indulgence.
Yeah, it really kind of, like Mike was saying earlier, you read the label, you look at it, you're expecting just a chocolate punch in the face.
Yeah.
No.
It's a good beer. It's a good beer.
It's a good beer. But
I mean, I would buy it. I would definitely buy it again.
We have encountered this way more than once where the label leads you to think one thing and the taste is something else. Mm-hmm. Not bad. It's just good to know going mm-hmm. into it. So before
and the brewer's reputation, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
Rare
this
Boss
is.
And yeah. Hennepin and all the other things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's got Omegang, you know you're getting a good beer, right?
Good beer.
No doubt. I was expecting something a little chocolatier, but
yeah, just from the label.
Yeah, but like we said, finished a little dry. So we got another good beer coming up, a really interesting beer, and this is where we're going to talk about the craft beer and all the news from the craft beer scene. But before we get into that, let's get into another standard Big Foamy Head segment. Beer news.
It's time for Big Foamy Head Beer Witness News. The latest breaking, hop-hitting, no-holds-barred coverage of the malt and barley world. Sit back, crack a cold one, and get ready for...
This is an A1 4-alarm red, white, and blue alert.
Beer news.
Our story tonight, Budweiser gets its own kingdom. Obviously, there's a little payola going on somewhere. Representative Kurt Show Me the Money Doherty has launched an effort to get Budweiser named the official state beer of Missouri. Will he next lobby for Slim Jims to be named the official beef stick snack of Missouri? Or will the Armor Vienna sausage contingent try to defeat that? And what about the Airstream folk? Will he step up for them and get them named the official state mobile home? Well, you can read all about it on Beer News, and I wish to God I was making this up. But I'm not. As a weasel. You can see their hands in his pockets. It's like lobbying to get him named the official state beer because he says they brought so many jobs to the state. It's like, yeah, they brought an ass load of alcoholics to the state too, right?
Yeah. Amen.
I mean, a whole bunch of them. But whatever, you know, Kurt is out there and he's introduced this bill. This is very recent. And he's going to have them named the state beer. But and you know what? They're not going to be the first. Other states have named drinks, milk, and some other weird soda and stuff like that.
Birds,
Whatever. You know, I mean, it's amazing the lengths of stupidity that people go to and what they will try and name.
This just in. Yes, he is really that stupid. Matthew McConaughey is known best for not wearing a shirt, which apparently is more valued than his acting, as you hear about that far less now. Now he's showing even dumber than you thought. Plus, it runs in his family. This dipstick wants to name his unborn kid after his brew of choice, just like his equally stupid brother, who actually did this.
Don't hold back, Mike.
You can't make this up, man. This article, believe it or not, his brother actually named his kid Miller Lite.
This is a real kid.
They spelled it Lyte. But,
yeah, that's the hip, cool spelling.
Yeah, named your kid Miller Lite, man.
Well, at least he didn't name him Omegang Chocolate Indulgence.
No. Or Miller SAB.
No, Prince would name his son Chocolate Indulgence.
Although that's kind of cool.
But anyway, go.
So what is Matthew want? But and what is Matthew wanting to name his kid? Bud.
Bud. Yeah. The article there. He's wanting to name it Bud, but his Brazilian model wife Camilla is less than impressed.
Yeah, no kidding. I think she's the brains of the bunch. You think?
He's got the cash. Of course, she's probably makes pretty good coin too.
Yeah. Well, you know, stupidity doesn't end just in the United States. This just struck me as just bizarre. Okay, I thought at first, oh, this is really nice. And I thought, wait a minute, for our sightless, drunk Japanese friend. Okay, this is a clever sort of idea, but kind of pointless. Apparently, there's just an assload of pop-top cans in Japan. So if you're blind, you may not know what you're picking up and drinking, although one would think you ordered it, right? But what they've done to kind of help you is they've begun stamping Braille on the can tops, okay? So that way you can run your fingers over them and know whether it's beer, soda, coffee in a can, which is popular, or whatever. But according to an article on the website, the beers and coolers are vending machines. So there's no Braille on the buttons. So you're not going to know until you buy it. And some can of crap pops out here. And, how do you know there's a machine nearby, right? Is there like signs all over the wall in Braille? I mean, it's always just fascinating to me. It's like, okay, the little elevator deals. Are you just like running all up and down the wall to find where there's an elevator? Somebody had to have told you, and therefore somebody could have told you, hey, you're buying a coffee instead of a beer. Okay, whatever. I thought, it's pseudo-politically correct of the Japanese to do this. So good for them.
Helping the blind people.
And now, Rick, here's the last thing, okay? Because we're in March, and this is where... You know, I thought I kept on top of stuff, but this just shows how stupid I really am. You think you know these things. The new world's turned upside down when you find out you're completely wrong. There's an article now about a huge cyberspace, hate that word, movement to make St. Patrick's a holiday.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm not kidding this. I can't make this up. Apparently, St. Patrick's Day is not a holiday. It just appears on every calendar on the planet, but it's not a holiday.
That's nothing but a bunch of blarney.
You go to Walmart. Yeah,
which should be the holidays, the day after St. Patrick's Day. That way you can go drink all the green beer.
Exactly right.
And pass out and not worry about going to work the next day.
Walmart
sells too much green shit for it not to be a holiday.
I mean, well, if you're going to have a holiday, you own the money there. That's the day after. It's not St. Patrick's Day Eve. It's post St. Patrick's Day.
The Catholics are really good about that because they have a holy day of obligation on January 1st when everybody's hungover, and then they've got another holy day right after Halloween, All Souls Day. So
yeah,
we ought to make the day after St. Patrick's Day another holy day.
There we go, the All Clovers Day or something.
That's just an excuse for them to drink more beer on the day before so you can get involved the next day.
Who you got to know to make this an official holiday? I mean, I know that Valentine's Day was lobbied by some mother or something, and then it turned out it was affiliated with Hallmark cards, etc. So, curiously enough, the people driving this petition is the Guinness folk.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're wanting to get a petition and carry it to whatever the government office of holidays is. So we'll make this an official holiday. So who knew? I thought it was a real holiday.
The French celebrate the bank holidays, so let's call this one a bank holiday.
Yeah, right. Okay, we don't close the bank on Valentine's Day. We're not going to do it on St. Patrick's Day. But I agree with you. It's the day after. That's the one we need a holiday. All right, so that's it for beer news. For more beer news, go to beernewsradio.com. And
can you find that on Beer Safari?
You can. Good point, Mike. I almost let it go again. Beersafari.com is a kind of a gateway to all of the beer podcasts. Because
it's
like
a jungle of beer out there.
It's a jungle of beer out there. There's a lot of podcasts that suck. This might be one of them. And go to beersafari.com. Hear all of our good friends at the Good Beer Show, The Beer Report, Craft Beer News, Pacific Brew News, Davis on Draft, Big Foamy Head, and gosh,
man,
a lot more. I mean, we're just really starting to just ramp up there. It's a whole bunch of
beer
podcasts.
We're even making up new ones even as we go.
Yeah, so we just make them up. might not last a week.
And speaking of James Spencer, he sent us some beers.
Yeah. Our dear friend James Spencer from the home brewing side of the house, basicbrewingradio.com.
And Basic Brewing Video.
Yep. He sent us some beers, and we're going to feature those on a show coming up. So let me ask you this, guys. Whenever somebody learns that I like beer more than just a little, a couple of questions come up, right? Here's the question that I always get asked when they find out, you know, I'm such crazy about a good beer. They say, okay, do you make your own beer? And, well, I said, well, yeah, you know, I have, because it's kind of something that I wanted to kind of learn a little more about it. But speaking for me, I'm not really that, I don't consider myself that good a home brewer. I don't have a lot of time. I've made a number of batches over the year. But, you know, it's just not something I'm doing, whereas you two are probably actually in it a little more, right? And so what do you see? How do you see that you got into it and why it is that you make beer when you could just go buy a beer?
Well, for me, it's the artistic side of it. I mean, when I first figured out from our neighbor, Thomas Carey, that you could actually brew your own beer, it was a real epiphany for me. It was an awakening. I didn't know you could do that, and I became obsessed with it afterwards. I mean, I pretty much think about that most of the time. So,
you mean like brewing beer?
The hobby, right?
Oh, yeah. You're off the deep end. You think about it most of the time, like that, like when you're awake.
I don't want to sound overly obsessive or strange, but it's become a big part of my life.
Even when you're making love to your wife, you think about brewing beer, right?
Yeah. He's thinking about
hops and hop shortage. And
it depends on whether I need to make a starter or not.
A starter? Jeez. Okay.
I think the reason I got into it was definitely through you guys. I mean, Rick especially was doing a lot of homebrew, and Tom too. I was kind of like you, Rick. I was amazed that you could actually make your own beer, and I didn't know you could do that. And it's really surprised me. The batches that I've made, they've all been drinkable, and everybody says it's tough to make a bad beer. I mean, even that mistake that Justin Davis had turned out to be a pretty good beer.
Yeah, the beer that a couple of shows ago, one of our fellow
Davis
podcasters,
Draft, Nashville,
yeah,
Tennessee.
Yeah, he sent us a beer that he'd made, and something went horribly wrong, and some weird strain of yeast got into it and changed the character of the beer.
And it wasn't bad beer.
No, I really
it was
liked
very good.
It. And so that, yeah, to your point, Rick, it's something that can be an art, but now for me, I didn't have the time, and I was just fascinated by so many beers out there. I wanted to just go, and on a weekend, or if I was traveling, I'd go find 5, 6, 7 different beers, bring them home, try them and stuff, right? And it's just, you know, the idea of making your own is fantastic. You can really get very arty and crafty about what you're going to do, right? The mm-hmm. different types, if you really like something. And it takes a little bit of discipline. You have to be a little clean about it. And, you know, for me, I do it every once in a while. I know, Rick, you do it pretty regular. And Mike is kind of like in between us. And
I think what I'm getting ready to do is, because you guys have had me all over the board with beers. I mean, God, we have sampled so many beers, and I go, wow, I like this one. Wow, I like that one. No, I don't like this one. Yeah, I like this one a little better than that one. But I think what I'm going to try to do in the near future is try to pick a couple of beers and brew them toward that style and really get, you know, a clone
like a style
recipe.
That, a style that you like.
A style right. that I like and maybe even a couple that I don't like as much, but really try to get that beer to come out to that style.
And I guess it kind of goes back to what
it's where, more of an art or a craft okay. or whatever.
Well, where we first started that, right? All the way back at the beginning of the show, we talked about how 96% of the United States is drinking one type of beer. It's three subclasses of one type of beer. And by the Beer Judge Certification Program, it's the lamest, weakest, just most bland type there is.
Here's the secret. They actually brew a bigger beer and then they water it down for sale to the masses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's like, you know, you wouldn't buy a nice bottle of wine and then cut it with a gallon of water, mm-mm. right? And so, but if that's all you'd ever had, you might be kind of over the top. So this is where something where as you kind of like learn about the different types of beer, kind of go down that path, try different types. Brew pubs, tap houses, friend's house, beer dinner, whatever. It's like open your eyes, try some things. And as you get into it, it kind of starts this fire, right? Mm-hmm. You want to have something different. And depending on how it takes hold of you, you might make it where whenever you travel. Like one of the things I love to do, I go somewhere and say, what are your local beers? I go looking for the regional, the local beers. And there's areas in the United States, depending on where you go, Southern California, Hop Monsters, right? Mm-hmm. Minneapolis, the Minnesota contingent, they've got theirs. The Northeast, they've got their kind of styles. Even the Florida area's got theirs. So you got all these different types and areas of beers. To me, that's real interesting. And like you were saying, Mike, you see something, okay, I like this type of beer. I'm going to learn how to own that class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you made an Imperial Stout. You made a pair of cider. You made an IPA. And Rick's made one of everything, seems mm-hmm. like. And, you know, just keeps going. So very
– You know, I was at Bosco's the other night, and I had that Wee Heavy. I think that's the one I'm going to go after.
A Scottish
man.
Ale.
Scottish Wee
God,
Heavy.
That was dynamite. Okay.
And so a Scottish ale, though.
I've got one on tap.
Okay, so man. For the listeners out there, that's one that's not necessarily a hop bomb.
Mm-hmm.
It is a malty beverage, mm-hmm. and that's one of its characteristics. And so why don't we take just a minute here. I want to play a guy that we got an event. We were talking about this online, offline, that's coming up here soon. And I'm not talking about St. Patrick's Day, which is right around the corner, but I'm talking about a little further out, Memphis in May. One of our favorite times of the year. If you can't get to Memphis and see the blues stage at Memphis in May, man, you are missing out on the best blues that you will ever see this year. And this is one of the acts I've been looking forward to. I'm glad these guys are coming to town. This is Little Ed and the Blues Imperials.
You lose. your husband first until you cuss. You look for me, but I won't be around. You're searching whole wide city, but I won't be found. Cause you never miss your water. Never miss your water till you well run dry. Never will. I won't be around. There you'll be sorry that you put me down. Never miss your water until your well will dry. Ooh, baby. Yeah.
That was Little Ed, and that is a little sample of what you're going to hear at Memphis in May, which is one of the Big Foamy Head events. We
buy the 3-day pass.
And got your airplane tickets?
Got his ticket. Got his bags packed. He's ready to go. And it's a big deal. I mean, we lived down there the entire time. And this year, we're inviting everybody who listens to the show to come down to the Flying Saucer for our pre-beer entrance into the park. We'll be talking about this more on future shows about where we're going to be. Encourage you to come down and join us, and we just have a good old time in Memphis in May.
Memphis style.
And
it's 3 days of hard partying.
It is.
We're not young, so.
You know, I only did one day with you guys last year, but I'm going to be there all three this year.
Yeah, it's a great time and fantastic music. And
we're pretty wore out at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you go to breakfast afterwards, you know, you might get home around 2 or 3 in the morning.
That's an early
day.
3 days
in a row, you're tired.
That's right. But it's a great time and well worth the trip. If you haven't been to Memphis, this is a good reason to go.
If you want to come to Memphis, Dick will put you up for a day.
That's right. My house, come on.
Mi casa, su casa.
I got a little couch in the beer studio now. Yeah. We'd get 4 or 5 people on it easy. But, okay.
Got a beer fridge.
Yeah. So, we were talking about the homebrew influence and the beers, though, that we're drinking on here. Of course, you can't brew everything. And what I like to do is find a lot of different styles of beers. And this is the thing that I like. And remember, we're talking about a numbers game here. We're only talking about 4%, right? The craft brew market. And these craft brew people are the most accessible, nicest people you would ever want to meet. You will not be able to go up to Augustus Bush the 4 yeah. or whichever number they're up to now and talk to him about his beer. It just isn't going to happen, right? Adolphus Coors or whatever his child is running the joint. But you want to go see Sam Calagione of Dogfish Head. You want to go see Rob from Allagash. You want to go see any of the Adam Avery, right? They're right there. You know, Linus from Yazoo Brewing up in Nashville. I mean, they're right there. They cannot be more accessible. They don't care who you are. They're just so appreciative of the fact that you enjoy their beer.
When I first met Linus from Yazoo Brewery, he took me out to his van to show me a hole he drilled in the side of the van so he could put a beer tap through it.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they are just a bunch of entrepreneurs, and they never, ever forget. And so here's something, Mike. We brought this up and talked about this last show. These guys don't forget where they came from, okay? Jim Cook at Sam Adams, right? Big microbrewery. I mean, they have hit the big time. And of all of the people in the world who could forget where they're coming from, they don't. there is a hop shortage out there. They've opened their doors. They said, any of you guys that need some hops, we're here. No questions asked, right?
Helping all the small brewers.
On it at cost.
Right, at cost. We mentioned earlier in the show about if you want to know about beer dinners and beer pairings, go to beerdinners.com. This is run by Flying Dog. They actively promote what you would think is their competitors, but they don't see it that way. This is pushing the industry, everybody helping one another. We're all going to benefit from it. And they're accessible to us, the beer podcasters.
Spit it out.
Yeah. So it's good stuff. So speaking of craft beer and our next beer, what are we drinking here, Rick?
This is Collaboration, Not Litigation Ale, and it's a beer that I've absolutely fallen in love with. It's a 1076 original gravity that balances out to 8.72% alcohol by volume. And the backstory on this is there were two Salvation Ales. Adam Avery from Avery Brewing Company had a Salvation Ale, and Vinny Sloruzzo, or I can't say his name, starts with a C, from Russian River, California, had a Salvation Ale also. So Adam Avery called him up and said, hey, well, what are we going to do about this? I mean, and Vinny said, I don't think we need to do anything. How about we both brew our own Salvation Ales? So this is in celebration of that. It's a collaboration ale. Originally, they had said that they were going to do a blend, and Adam had gone out to California, and they worked on the blend, perfected it, and then came home, and both got busy and dropped it. Well, much later, Beer Advocate magazine was doing an interview with Adam Avery, and he committed to doing the beer, so he called up Vinny after the magazine hit the shelves and said, oh, guess what? I committed to doing this. So they got together and they figured out how they were going to blend this and how they were going to brew it. And he came out to Boulder to brew this. And they blended it. And the proceeds from this beer, this is what I think is really exciting, goes to A for the Brett Pack, which is Sam Calagione, Rob Todd, Tommy Arthur, Vinny, and Adam. I'll get to go to Belgium every year and go drinking.
Right, and these are technically five competitors, right?
Right, right. They should hate each other because they're in the same market space, competing for store shelves, but they're the best of friends.
Yeah, and they just use the money to, like you said, further their art, and they all work together because at the end of the day, it's kind of like you know, if you ain't with us, you're against us. And you've got all of these craft brewers fighting market share. I mean, they got nowhere to go but up, right?
Correct.
And 96% of the market isn't
double
theirs.
Double-digit growth every year.
Yeah. So good stuff. And we're about to try this beer. So I've had my first sip of the collaboration, not litigation. And looking at this, it's a kind of an amber copper color.
Beautiful.
Not dark, dark. And the head's dissipated a little bit, but you swirl around, comes right back out. And we're drinking this out of Chimay glasses, not a pint glass, kind of a Belgian beer glass. And the nose on it, it's got a Belgian overtone to it. And, man, the taste, very nice.
Very good.
A lot of Belgian styles, and we've talked about Belgian on the show before, and this is one of those, when you talk about beers, for some reason, everybody in the world thinks Germany is where all the good beers came from. That's just not necessarily the case. They got a lot of good beers there, but, you know, like we said, U.S. is really, I think, these days, one of the more artistic beer centers. Mm-hmm. But the Belgians have made some fine beers for hundreds and hundreds of years, and this has kind of the Belgian characteristic to me.
I'm getting a lot of, like, plum and maybe raisin, you think?
Yeah, kind of a little richer, fruitier kind of flavors coming through on this. And, Rick, we were talking about how you mentioned about the collaboration part of it, but both these guys have come up with a beer called Salvation, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And these were, it's a Belgian style. And so you've got Avery, because they're right down the street from you. these days. What kind of beer is the Salvation? Is it Belgian? Is it a triple, a quad? What is it?
Probably just a Belgian strong ale. The difference between the two really is the fact that Avery does not filter the beer, so you get a lot more of the yeasty tang kind of cloudiness that comes from an unfiltered beer, whereas Avery, they filtered theirs very much. And they use Styrian hops, which I guess this is probably about the last year they're going to be able to brew this. So if you want to drink Salvation, go buy it now, because I think the Styrian hops is going away.
Yeah.
They were affected by hail. The farmers stopped producing. They repurposed land for other things. It's over in Europe, so I don't think they're even brewing enough to export right now. So the next version of Salvation coming from Avery is going to be reformulated, much different than you're tasting right now.
So this is a beer that it's very, not only is it limited because of the collaboration, but the very ingredients that are being made or that were used to create this beer are not really going to be available next year. So we've got a really unique type of beer, and this, again, goes back to the whole premise of the show is finding new beers, trying new beers, and just exploring the different tastes. So we've covered a lot of ground on this show, and again, we want to mention that we kind of revisited ourselves for the new listeners and for some of the people who have been directed here from other podcasts, from radio shows, magazine articles, etc. Hope you picked up a little bit about what we're all about. Encourage you to listen to some of our past shows, listen to some of our fellow podcasts. Go out and try something different. Try a different beer. There's just a whole new world out there. Try it with food. It pairs so well with so many different types of foods. And, dollar for dollar, this is a real cheap way to explore different tastes, different styles. And it's just a great thing. And try it out. We'll be here kind of every week or so, giving you guidance, trying beers so you don't have to, and letting you know what we think. And, of course, we always encourage you to make your own decisions. Visit the website, bigfoamyhead.com. Visit our fellow podcasts at beersafari.com. You know, if you're feeling up to it, feel free to go visit your local homebrew shop. Visit your local tap house. Visit somebody like, especially if you're here in Memphis, our friend Chuck Skypeck at Bosco's, one of the finer award-winning brew pubs. Mm-hmm. There is
any, the Flying Saucer.
Flying Saucer taps out. Yeah.
You can come to Memphis in May.
Yeah. And get into it. Now we segue to the blues part. We got all kinds of music. And that's what this show, that's basically Big Foamy Head 101. That's what we're all about. And so hope you had a good time with us. We've had a good time with you and with all of our beers. Join us for shows to come. See you next time.
Drive safe.
Come back to see us. We'll be right back.
proper Sunday dress.